Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.
This is Ed Barena reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ with some political updates. There are several candidate forums coming up this week featuring East County candidates. On Wednesday, October 1st, the League of Women Voters will host a Meet the Candidates reception from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Hall of Champions in Balboa Park. This free event will feature candidates for state legislative offices representing San Diego and East County, as well as San Diego City Council, Superior Court Judge, San Diego Unified School District, and San Diego Community College District. Each candidate will make introductory statements, and there will be time for networking and asking questions of candidates in an informal atmosphere. A forum for La Mesa City Council and mayoral candidates will also be held on Tuesday, October 7th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. This event will be held at the La Mesa United Methodist Church Social Hall at the intersection of La Mesa Boulevard and Palm Avenue. Lakeside Candidate Night will be held Thursday, October 9th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds. This nonpartisan event is open to all candidates running to represent Lakeside, including school boards, fire boards, planning boards, water boards, and higher offices, as well as local ballot initiative campaigns.
La Mesa's Planning Commission will hear a revamped proposal for the controversial Park Station high-rise project on Wednesday, October 1st at 6:30 in City Hall. How tall would those 10-story high-rise buildings actually be? Taller than the hills on all sides of it. Twice as tall as the tallest buildings in downtown La Mesa, and only 3 feet shorter than Mount Nebo. That's far taller than the 4 stories currently allowed in the city. The website Fight Park Station La Mesa proclaims Park Station is a cancer that will eat at the heart of La Mesa and we need to stop it. But Urban Housing Partners, representing the developer, states new homes, restaurants, and retail services should be a win-win for the residents and the city of La Mesa. New simulated images just released show how the buildings would dominate or eliminate views from several locations in La Mesa, including the downtown village, the trolley station, La Mesa Boulevard, Mount Nebo, the intersection of Baltimore Drive and El Cajon Boulevard, and several residential streets nearby. The simulations were created by the Fight Park Station La Mesa website. Another image shows the towers dwarfing the American Legion building. The American Legion pulled out as a co-applicant of the project, concluding it is not suitable in scale for the area after all. Supporters say the multi-use project would bring needed revenues to La Mesa, also providing housing along a trolley line and retail spaces. But opponents contend it would cause congestion and visual blight, lacks adequate parking, and is out of scale for the historic town that recently celebrated its centennial. Whatever recommendation the Planning Commission makes will ultimately come back before La Mesa's City Council, which has the final authority to determine whether La Mesa will retain its historic small-town character or opt for urbanization. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Forest Service will hold a public meeting on SDG&E's proposed power line replacement projects and how those may impact Cleveland National Forest. The meeting will be on Wednesday, October 1st from 5 to 7 p.m. in the Alpine Community Center at 1830 Alpine Boulevard in Alpine. The website Backcountry Voices notes that Southern California is one of the most renewable energy-rich regions in the state, and it's also what residents are calling ground zero for the San Diego backcountry. According to SDG&E, the 5-year project, spread across roughly 880 square miles in eastern San Diego County, will make the transmission system more reliable and reduce the risk of wildfire. However, the $418 million project is drawing criticism from some environmentalists and residents who fear this could be a first step in a grander plan to eventually increase the amount of power that could be carried by the lines. Two representatives of the Protect Our Communities Foundation, an environmental group that formed during the Sunrise PowerLink debate several years ago, told administrative law judge Gene Veith that they don't believe the goal of the project is only to replace decades-old transmission lines and make them resistant to fire. Some critics cite high costs to taxpayers of transmitting energy from remote desert wind and solar projects over the lines. San Diego Gas and Electric Company is proposing to combine over 70 existing special use permits for SDG&E electric facilities within the Cleveland National Forest into one master special use permit to be issued by the United States Forest Service. The study includes both the Palomar and Descanso Ranger districts in unincorporated areas of San Diego County. In addition to requesting Forest Service authorization of the permit allowing for continued operation and maintenance of SDG&E's existing electric facilities within the National Forest, SDG&E is also replacing certain existing power lines and distribution lines in and near the forest. The proposed power line replacement projects would primarily include fire hardening along with the relocation and undergrounding of certain lines across many rural areas in East County. SDG&E's proposed power line replacement project not only traverses National Forest System lands, but due to the patchwork of land ownership in the project study area, also crosses lands managed by the Bureau of Land Management, tribal lands, Cuyamaca Rancho State Park, city park lands, and private properties in unincorporated San Diego County. The Forest Service has reviewed the application and accepted the proposal with modifications on National Forest System lands. Modifications to the federal proposed action were made in response to suggestions from the public and agencies during scoping and by the cooperating federal agencies. To help affected communities understand the project's environmental and safety impacts and to explain how the public can comment on the plan, the Forest Service is holding an informational meeting on October 1st at the Alpine Community Center. Residents of the backcountry who will be most impacted by the projects are encouraged to attend. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
If you had damage from any of the 14 brush fires that struck San Diego County in May and led to a statewide disaster declaration, the Franchise Tax Board has some welcome news for you. You can get a refund right away by applying your losses retroactively to your 2013 taxes, last year's returns. That means you would likely be eligible for a refund right away. If you already filed your 2013 taxes, you should file a Form 540X or amended individual tax return to claim the loss retroactively. If you're late filing and haven't yet sent in your forms, you can claim the loss when you file. Taxpayers are advised to write in red lettering at the top of your return, "Disaster, San Diego Wildfires 2014." While filing right away can hasten any refund that you're owed, you have until October 15th of next year to make your disaster loss deduction on your 2013 taxes in most cases. Also, if you need a copy of your estate tax return due to fire damage or loss, you can download a form online to receive a copy free of charge by writing "San Diego Wildfires 2014 in red ink on top of your request form. For more information, visit the Franchise Tax Board website at ftb.ca.gov and read its publication titled "Disaster Loss, How to Claim a State Tax Deduction." This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Apple farmers in Julian have not been able to savor the fruits of their labors this year. The drought has hit apple orchards hard, along with a warmer-than-normal winter followed by a spring freeze. That means fewer apples for those hoping to pick their own fruits during Julian's annual Apple Days festival this weekend. 10 News reports that at Peacefield Orchard, only 3 out of 500 apple trees produced fruit this year, and a neighboring orchard had no crop at all. Some other orchards do remain open, however, and there will still be plenty of apple cider, apple pie, and other traditional apple products for visitors to savor in Julian, even if some of those apples had to be brought in from other areas this year. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Foster Farms, a major poultry company based in California, has recalled 40,000 pounds of chicken due to listeria contamination, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The recall includes frozen grilled chicken shipped to retailers in multiple states, including Costco and Stater Brothers stores in California. Retailers have been notified to remove products from store shelves. The recalled products have a Best Buy date of August 5th and the code P33901 on packaging. Consuming food contaminated with Listeria can cause listeriosis, a bacterial infection that can cause fever, muscle aches, headache, convulsions, and digestive tract problems. No illnesses have been reported thus far from the contaminated chickens. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
At the El Cajon Courthouse on Monday, a man accused of murdering his wife and dumping her body in the Anza Borrego Desert 7 years ago pled not guilty to the crime. Police arrested Anthony Edward Simonu in Hawaii earlier this month and extradited the former Navy dental assistant to San Diego County to face charges. His wife, Fumiko Ogawa, was last seen in January 2007 at the couple's home in Point Loma. Simonu never reported his wife missing and told neighbors she had moved to Hawaii. He had filed for divorce, 10 News reports, but delayed the action after his Japanese wife inherited a substantial sum of money. After she went missing, he reportedly went on a shopping spree buying boats, Land Rovers, and a Hummer. A few weeks after her disappearance, Ogawa's remains were found by a couple going camping in the desert. However, the remains were not identified until over 4 years later, in June 2011, and it took another 3 years to identify the suspect and build a case to bring him to justice. If convicted, Simonu could spend the rest of his life in prison. This is Leon Thompson with a Crime Beat report on East County Magazine.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The California Public Utilities Commission held hearings in El Cajon on September 18th regarding a proposal to change its utility rate structure. California currently has four tiers for utility rates, with Tier 1 the lowest rate and Tier 4 the highest. Everybody gets a baseline amount of electricity at the lowest tier rates, and those in hotter climates are allotted more. Those in the higher tier rates who use the most energy are charged more per unit. This proposal for rate changes, which is supported by the utility companies, including SDG&E, would do two things. First, it would add a monthly fixed charge of $10 to every customer's bill, or $5 for low-income customers. Second, it would reduce the number of tiers from four to just two, and have only a small difference in the rates charged between those two tiers. Tier 1 rates on the lowest energy users and low-income consumers would go up, which critics, including the Sierra Club, say discourages conservation and would have negative impacts on those who can't afford to pay any more. There would also be a significantly smaller difference in rates between the top and bottom tiers, providing less incentive for people to conserve energy. The plan is supported by the East County Chamber of Commerce, which contends that people in hot inland areas are subsidizing lower rates for those in cooler coastal zones. The Sierra Club contends that's not true and that those in hot areas already have a higher base rate for electricity usage at lower rates. So what did local residents have to say? Well, at the hearing, local citizens spoke out to air their views on both sides of the issue. Frank Belia of Lakeside supports the proposed change, and here's why.
We live in a home that's two bedroom, one bath, built in 1959. Each month when we get our utility bill, it's a bit of a scare. We primarily reside in tiers 3 and 4, and we've done as much energy efficient upgrades as we can to our home. We don't think it's fair that the tier 3 and tier 4 customers bear the bulk of the cost. We believe that a more uniform, non-discriminatory application would be beneficial for all.
Gary Carnop of Ramona, who's currently in the top tier, also backs the plan.
The truth is, if you live in Tier 1, you probably live close to the ocean and do not need air conditioning. I live in Ramona, and I am in Tier 3 and Tier 4. No matter how hard we conserve and try, we cannot get out of Tier 3 and Tier 4. Our rates continually creep up. I had five in my family down there, moved away, and the kids are growing and whatnot, and it's just, we're down to two of us, yet we're still struggling to get out of Tier 3 and 4. It's impossible. If I'm in Tier 3 or 4, I am paying twice as much as per kilowatt hour as my friends that are living along the ocean. And it's just unethical and unfair. I urge the commission to find a more equitable way and adopt these more equitable policies by next summer. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
But Ramona resident Michael Castanelli testified that he's crunched the numbers and he opposes the plan.
I live in Humboldt. I received notice from SDG&E about how I'm subsidizing the people on the West Coast and everything, how they put their spin on it. I would like to say that I've spent my life earning a living as a statistical analyst. I've done literally dozens of jobs over 15 to 20 years for SDG&E. CPUC has been my client. They all trust me on my analysis when they make their decisions, and I'm asking the same today. The two-tier that they're proposing is not in the best interest of ratepayers. SDG&E doesn't make decisions on what's fair. They make decisions on what adds value to their shareholders at the expense of their ratepayers. I live by myself. I work very hard to conserve energy. I've got my energy bills down to where only 35% of my energy is in tiers 3 and 4. But if we go to the two-tier structure, and making the assumption that my same energy use is all in tier 1, I'll be paying 31% more. I'll be paying about $800 more a year under their new proposal. This needs to be looked at. The PUC is the only organization that can help us as ratepayers. Because SDG&E, that's not why they're in business, to help us.
Milton Rinskopf, a Ramona resident who invested in solar for his home, is also against the proposal, which he says will penalize those with solar.
I'm here to talk about the this change, and I'm concerned about how it de-incentivizes people who are thinking about putting in solar and how it punishes those of us who have made that investment. My wife and I went through the fire. We lost our home and all our belongings in 2007. Our electric bill in that house was $300 to $400 a month. After we rebuilt, the first 3 months in the house, it's roughly the same size, almost the same footprint. The bill went from $300 to $400 a month to $1,100 to $1,200 a month. I was nearing retirement and knew that I could not afford to retire if I had that kind of electric bill. So my wife and I decided to take a significant amount of money out of our savings and out of our retirement and invest in solar, which we did. Our bill was significantly reduced. Rather than paying $1,100 or $1,200 a month, it was knocked down to paying $500 a year. With that kind of a savings, we were expecting to recoup the investment on our solar over about a 10-year period. With this change that's proposed, it's going to significantly push that out. It's going to penalize those of us that have invested in solar, and it's going to eliminate any incentive for additional solar customers.
A candidate for state senate, Frank Simbukakis, also spoke at the hearing, and here's what he had to say.
According to this plan, anybody who makes up to $140,000, including senior citizens, they will negatively be impacted by this raise. So I urge you to support lower rates and bigger tier gaps for the low-income people. Thank you.
Thank you.
Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ in El Cajon, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County features some fabulous backcountry festivals from Hakumba Hot Spring Centennial Celebration to Julian's Apple Days. Oktoberfest also continue this weekend in La Mesa and El Cajon.
Plus, we'll have previews of next week's coming attractions from the East County's Vintners Harvest Celebration in Potrero to a Bunko Bash in Lemon Grove, and for those early holiday shoppers, a Fair Trade holiday sale in La Mesa. So stay tuned for all these events and more from East County Magazine.
Hakumba Hot Springs will celebrate its centennial on October 4th. This town's festival will feature the Alpine Outlaws, recognized for their authentic Western shootout skits, as well as craft and food vendors, children's bounce houses, live music, raffles, a pumpkin patch, a swap meet, tour of the Chinese castle, and more. The festival is also the ending point for the Passport Through Time Classic Car Caravan, sponsored by the Old Highway 80 Corporation, which will arrive in Hukumba around noon Saturday. The festival celebration will be held in Hukumba's Community Park on Old Highway 80 in the heart of the historic Hukumba Hot Springs. Visit HukumbaHotSpringsCentennial.org and click the Festival tab for details.
As part of Julian's popular Apple Days celebration, a two-day Apple Days festival will be held October 4th and 5th at Mangini Winery in Julian, featuring apple displays, music and dancing, and antique tractor display, children's games and activities, gold panning demonstrations, a beer and wine garden, food and merchandise vendors, contests, and of course, apple pie. The event runs from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both Saturday and Sunday. For details, visit julianmerchants.org.
The La Mesa Oktoberfest is one of the East County's biggest street festivals, drawing 200,000 people every year. This year's Oktoberfest will be held October 3rd through the 5th in the heart of La Mesa's downtown village on La Mesa Boulevard between 4th Avenue and Acadia. The event, sponsored by the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce and the La Mesa Village Merchants Association, began as a small street fair over 35 years ago. Now, the three-day bash features over 250 vendors, food including German bratwurst in a beer garden, kids' activities, and entertainment ranging from the German music to classic rock and roll. For hours and details on each day's activities, visit lamesachamber.net.
The German-American Club's Oktoberfest celebration continues this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in El Cajon. You're invited to come and enjoy authentic German food such as bratwurst, ox on the spit, potato pancakes, sauerkraut, red cabbage, pretzels, and Bavarian pastries. You'll also find plenty of German beers as well as entertainment by the Gutenberg Band all the way from Germany. Feel free to dance and sing along with the chicken dance, polka, and umpapa songs. You can also watch traditional folk dancing performances, compete in games and contests, check out vendor and crafts booth, and let the kids enjoy the kids zone. For more information, visit the GermanClubSanDiego.org website.
The Eagles, one of the world's best-selling bands of all time, will be performing at the Viejas Arena at the San Diego State University on October 4th. The band sold over 150 million records, including such hits as Hotel California, Desperado, and Tequila Sunrise. The band has united for this History of the Eagles tour. The San Diego performance on October 4th will be held at 8 p.m. Tickets are still available at the Viejas Arena or through Ticketmaster.
Bates Nut Farm in Valley Center is famed for its giant pumpkins, some weighing 100 pounds or more, though there are plenty of smaller jack-o'-lanterns to be in their patch. On October 4th and 5th, Bates Nut Farm hosts a pumpkin festival from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., complete with a straw bale maze, tractor hay rides, pony rides, and an arts and craft fair featuring works by over 80 artisans ranging from candles and woodworking to jewelry. You also find food and live entertainment from 12 to 3 p.m. Admission and parking are free. For directions and details, check batesnutfarm.biz.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. The City of La Mesa will host its 5th annual Senior Expo on Thursday, October 9th, with a wide variety of speakers and exhibitors. Senior Expo will offer free one-stop shopping for senior services, tips on safety and security, and more. Senior Expo will be held at the La Mesa Community Center, 4975 Memorial Drive, La Mesa, 91942, from 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Flu shots will also be available.
You're invited to join the East County Vintners Wine Group for its second annual Mountain Empire Country Harvest Celebration on Saturday, October 11th, from 12 noon to sundown. The festivities take place at the Jim and Janet Wright Ranch and Vineyard in scenic Potrero. The festivities include a smoky barbecue with all the trimmings, wine samplings by local vineyards and wineries, plus a silent auction and door prizes. RSVPs and tickets are required. For tickets and reservations, contact countryharvest2014@gmail.com.
The Soroptimists are holding a bunco bash in Lemon Grove on Saturday, October 11th from 1 to 4 p.m. at St. John of the Cross Social Hall. Proceeds benefit projects that help women and children in the community. The event includes 3 rounds of bunco, door prize ticket, and snacks. A raffle will also be held. For tickets, send an email to soroptgloria@gmail.com.
If you want to get an early start on your holiday shopping, Fair Trade La Mesa will host a holiday sale on Sunday, October 12th. This all-day event at St. Martin's of Tours Parish Hall at 7710 El Cajon Boulevard will feature handmade artisan crafts, jewelry, coffee, and more. Fair Trade products help provide sustainable production and living wages for craftspeople around the world.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County show on KNSJ, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. My very special guest today is Frank Simbukakis, and Frank is running for the 38th State Senate District against incumbent Senator Joel Anderson. Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I should state that we have invited Senator Anderson as well, and we have not heard back from him. We certainly hope that he'll agree to appear, but thus far he has not agreed to appear in any debates or
challenge me in any debates. He has been invited by the League of Women Voters and by a couple of other groups that just wanted to put us on a forum, not debate style, where we can answer questions. So as they say at my church, he's avoiding like the devil avoids the cross.
Well, our view at East County Magazine is that when we have situations where one candidate, for whatever reason, chooses not to be available, we don't think that the voters should be deprived of hearing from the other candidate. And so we're very glad, Frank, that you agreed to join us today.
Thank you.
Now, Frank is in some ways an American success story. He's an immigrant from Greece who came here in 1977. He got his master's in business administration from National University. He also attended San Diego Community Colleges and has a degree in mass communications and sociology from UC Berkeley. He worked himself through college and later made his living working for a little while in the beer industry, I understand, for Budweiser. And these days he's been managing an investment portfolio of securities and real estate and has served as an elected board member on 2 nonprofits as well.
Yes, I served 4 years, twice elected, at my Greek community church, where I managed the finances along with another team. I was the treasurer for 2 of those years, and I was known as the hawk. I also got elected as a first vote getter at my homeowners association at Sky Ranch in Santee, where upon moving in, I decided I wanted to lower the the fees, and they went from $508 we were paying at the day we moved in to $187.31 as of this month, and it was 99% due to my effort.
Now, interestingly, you've stated that if elected, you would donate 50% of your salary. Can you tell us what prompted that and where you would donate it to?
Yes. It prompted it that in my whole career, I like to do what I felt comfortable doing and I enjoyed. I wasn't really big on wearing ties. Therefore, I never made more than $51,000 as an employee for the various companies I worked for. However, I managed to manage my money very well and end up where I'm at. So half of the salary of a state senator is about $47,000, $48,000. Plus, you have the per diem, which is about $29,000 a year if you attend every meeting. So I would still be taking half the pay, more than I made before. So obviously, I don't need the money. I'm doing it because I want to make this place better. And I want to donate it to what I believe the most in, and that's safety and education. So I would donate it evenly amongst schools in my district, fire departments, and police stations in my district.
Well, I know that would be greatly appreciated, I'm sure, by many of the taxpayers across East County. Now, you've also stated that you would not accept gifts in office and that you would commit to hold at least 8 public meetings a year with the citizens in your district.
Well, actually, I didn't accept gifts when I worked in the beer industry for 20 years because I didn't want to be obligated to anyone. I paid my way through. I will have actually 2 meetings a month for 11 of the 12 months. I think July is a good month to give people the time off and myself time off. So I would do 22 meetings a year, 4 hours for legislative advising and 4 hours where I would bring in local attorneys to advise people that face hardship, economic or financial.
Very good. So tell us why you decided to run for the state Senate, Frank.
Well, about a year and a half ago, there was a process going on to build a power plant in Santee, the Quail Brush power plant.
Right.
So I got involved near the end of it, and I opposed it. I also noticed that every East County legislator, regardless of political affiliation, opposed it, except for Joel Anderson. He didn't even send a letter in opposition. So I looked back. He didn't oppose the Quail Brush power plant, and he also didn't oppose the Sunrise Power Link.
That's correct, as well as he has not opposed many of the large-scale industrial wind and industrial solar facilities that
correct.
Many of his constituents have raised concerns about and asked him to oppose.
So when he did this, I started thinking, you know what, somebody needs to run against this guy because he doesn't really care about East County. Nobody was willing to step up, and I started researching him. And the more I researched, I'm looking and I'm finding things. This guy has been for all throughout the 90s. He hasn't really been a savvy.
Yeah, he had a number of tax liens, both state and federal, back in the 90s, and that included both business liens and at least one personal lien.
Correct. The personal was satisfied. The other ones were never satisfied. The company just closed out. But he bragged that he had a $1 million business. And I don't know how you're successful when you close down a business so you don't pay your taxes.
Yeah, he's called himself a tax writer. Actually, that's kind of been
ironic.
The moniker he uses.
And then I looked when he got elected to Padre Dam, which is, East County is a close-knit community. If you're good friends with a bunch of the churches in a local area, you're able to get elected. And hopefully you'll do the right thing. He didn't. He raised expenses at Padre Dam, $21.3 million. Padre Dam is a small water utility, and he really didn't do a lot besides raising the fees.
Yeah.
Correct. He also, I found out from one of the gentlemen that was on the board, he also tried to sell the Santee Lakes to KOA. Apparently, hardly anybody in Santee knew about it, or the word didn't get out.
And so he wanted it to become a privately owned
correct. Program? Well, he's in speaking with some Republican personalities in East County, I discovered they consider him more of a libertarian than they consider him a Republican. However, in East County, you're most likely not to be elected unless you're registered as a Republican.
Right. I would like to circle back to the energy issues.
Yes.
Now, Joel Anderson actually had to give back a number of donations and was fined for campaign finance violations in a couple of
2009,
years.
He paid back $148,000 in donations. and $20,000 in fines. The maximum fine per violation was $5,000. He paid $4,000 for each one of them.
Right. For those who may not be familiar or forgotten, what happened was there were some large donations from tribes, from I believe it was SDG&E and
the
from
Hammond.
The Hammond companies. And they're the Hammond family, which owns a lot of property for these large energy projects, incidentally, in East County. And they had given money to a Republican Central Committee in another county,
Fresno.
Which in turn, Fresno County, which in turn funneled the money into Anderson's campaign.
After getting a cut.
In excess of the amounts that you're allowed to donate.
Correct.
And so that was found to, that was basically illegal, according to the FPPC. Anderson never admitted wrongdoing, but did give the money back.
And paid the fines.
And paid the fines,
And
yes.
He got elected. That was the tragic part. Right after that came out, he got elected into the state Senate. The big mainstream media in San Diego County has ignored this race. This race represents almost a million people.
Yeah.
And it's the small publications in East County that have tried to do the right thing. And the big companies, the big media is not picking it up because they're not interested.
I would like to talk some more about energy issues. Now, he has a long history of taking money from SDG&E and the Hammond companies and then not taking stances against the energy projects that the majority of his constituents in many of these towns oppose.
Yeah.
So I would like to ask you, Frank, what are your views about some of the controversial energy projects in East County, including not only the power plant you've mentioned,
mm-hmm.
but also some of the large-scale wind and solar projects that are proposed out here? What is your general philosophy for alternative energy and specifically on any of these large projects?
Well, I think the easiest way to do it and pump up the economy and make everybody happy is rooftop solar. Right now, rooftop solar is the equipment has come down in price, but the installations have not. I've spoken to the Board of Supervisors, and I think Diane Jacob agrees with me on a lot of those issues, about not building farms, solar farms, and wind farms in East County. Instead, working with a consortium of cities or the county and negotiating with certain solar installers, where they streamline the operations, eliminate some of the permit fees for senior citizens, for example, that can afford mm-hmm. that extra $500, and then working where they can put rooftop solar in every house. What this will do is, if they bring down the repayment period, the 4 or 5 years versus about 10 that it is right now for what it costs, then what will happen is all these homeowners that will have their own energy produced will not require any more power plants in the area, number one, and number two, it'll free up money in their pockets to spend in the local economy. In addition, because you probably have 150,000 homes that would require this, you'll have work installing solar panels for the next 5 to 10 years in the area, which means it'll pump up the economy in decent paying jobs.
Right, and it also means that if you put the solar and the energy where the power is being used in the urban areas and the suburban areas, then you don't have to have the environmental damage and the potential health hazards and fire hazards and so forth posed by these remote large-scale energy projects.
There's a power plant in Escondido that's right by Palomar College
mm-hmm.
that they just increased its power last year, since they didn't want to build another power plant. That will cover about 130,000 to 150,000 homes. If you put solar in all those homes, then you really don't need any power plants like that, which require fracked natural gas, and a lot of people don't know what fracking does.
Right.
Though it burns clean, its production costs water, it costs environmental damage. So we're trying to eliminate a lot of issues by taking care of one problem.
Yeah, speaking of water, that's one of the issues you mention on your flyer that you believe is an important issue for California.
Very big.
What are your views on the water situation for California and San Diego County specifically?
San Diego County, I believe in economies of scale. San Diego County has 24 water districts. 21 of them are doing their own water billing. In a meeting about 3 months ago with the water district, Sweetwater Water District, Helix, and Padre Dam, to which I belong, and it's probably the most expensive water district in San Diego, I asked the question, what's the optimal size for a water district? And they said 50 to 55,000 meters, customers. Padre Dam has about 22,000. Both Sweetwater and Mount and Helix Water District have about 55,000, and they're two of the cheapest ones around, and Padre Dam is one of the most expensive. Padre Dam that Joel Anderson used to run in the mid-2000s. So I said to Mr. Carlos Lugo, I asked one question. Why don't you guys merge with them? I mean, you're interacting in the same neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, we don't want them. They have debt.
Carlos Luba is with Helix Water.
He's the director of the right. of Helix Water District. And I said, you don't have – he says, no. And I said, well, that's where the that's where the state government needs to come in, clean up those books, and eliminate some of these duplicate water districts like Rancho Santa Fe. There's some water districts that have, whatever, 5 or 7,000 people. And what happens is you have – paid boards, even though it's per diem, you have paid managers, and a lot of these companies, and Padre Dem in particular, because I look at their finances, they're now outsourcing a lot of their repair work. Well, what's the difference? If you eliminate the administrators, you save a lot of money.
Yeah, we've also seen some really big problems with some of the backcountry water districts, such as Live Oak Springs, that was actually taken into a receivership. There was so much wrongdoing that the state found on the part of the folks running that one. Yeah. I mean, including things like falsifying health tests on the
water. It's hard to find enough competent people.
Illegally selling water to developers that was supposed to be drinking water for the people in the district.
You know, it's hard to find enough capable and honest people to run certain administrative units, let alone keep expanding and expanding. I mean, considering it's East County and this is a conservative county, I would think that they want to streamline some of the operations. And that's why some people wonder, and Diane Jacob asked me, she goes, how are you a Democrat and not a Republican? And I said, look, I am open on social issues and education, I said, unlike Republicans, I said, but on fiscal issues,
so
trust
me. You would say your views are a little more progressively on social issues.
I think she understood that maybe not as much as what I claim, that I'm a magician with money, with numbers, because I didn't have a lot growing up, so I needed to learn how to do a lot of things with very little, and we can do this.
Let's talk about those who don't have a lot today. You have told us that you are successful in life. As you mentioned, financially you're secure. You've told me you're a 2%er.
Yes.
But there's an awful lot of people in East County living below the federal poverty line who aren't even in the top 99%.
Correct.
How would your approach to those folks, the have-nots out there, the poor and the middle class, differ from your opponents? What message would you have for those?
I honestly think, Joel, and I've looked at how he votes on the legislation, he is a Darwinist, survival of the fittest. They asked me, why am I a Democrat and not a Republican? And I said, look, the Republicans think the playing field of opportunity is level. And as all of us know, we're not all the same. Nature, God hasn't built us all the same physical ability, the same mental ability. So the playing field of opportunity is not level. It has a lot of speed bumps, sometimes hillsides. And I'm trying to level it off. And I thought Democrats are doing a much better job trying to level it off. Once it's level, I think we can be as one. We'll never be perfect. Otherwise, we'd have an anarchical society, which some people don't understand. But, you know, I want to make the poor people come up. And how do you do this? One, you fight for maybe better pay and some better benefits. But there's another way to do it. You fight for cutting the cost of their expenses. And I'll give you a simple example. I don't have any power over it, but I was talking with Scott Peters' assistant. He's in Congress. The cable industry, the internet industry, they're regulated by the federal government. They got protected territories, yet, you know, as their customer base expands, they keep raising their, you know, their charging, right? So the average house now spends $300 a month to have good internet, cable television, and watch a few channels. Well, if you were to lower the fees, since they're protected, and give a household $100 a month cut, or if you were to merge the water districts and you save on administrative expenses, and a house can have their costs cut by a couple $100 a month, it's $1.30 an hour pay raise without giving them a pay raise. I mean, we solve a lot of problems. How do we do it? Minimum wage. You have a minimum wage, put it on automatic pilot, just like Social Security is. Cost of living increases every year. The business people can plan for it because they know what's coming. Nobody complains about Social Security going up by the rate of inflation. Why should they complain? Rents go up, insurance goes up, everything goes up.
Education has historically been one way for people to lift themselves out of poverty, but the cost of it has gone sky high in California, up and up and up. The governor just vetoed a bill that would have put more money into the state college and the UC system. And, of course, federal loans, student loans, have also gotten to be staggering. What are your views on public education, and particularly, do you have ideas for making higher
Yes.
education affordable once again for Californians?
Yes. All the researchers show that for every dollar spent on education, we get a return of 4.6 $1,000. That's 460%. And let me tell you something, even in the best, unless you're a very inside connected hedge fund manager, you don't make 460% in your money, if you're honest. So I think we need to focus as the primary part of the state, education along with safety. If you look around, the best neighborhoods in California are the ones that offer the best schools and the highest safety. So that's what I tell people. It's the number one defense mechanism for declining home prices, for crime. I like to make higher education, junior colleges, and the four-year public colleges tuition free for up to 5 years, not forever.
I'm sure there's a lot of students out there who love that.
For long-term California residents. What this will do is it will take the serious students that may have to work a little bit. It'll eliminate perhaps the need of working to pay for school because they will no longer have that big bill.
Where would you get the money to do that, Frank?
The money is very little. The way I calculated for long-term California residents, it was about $400,000 in California between the two UC and CSU schools and 2.1 million students for community colleges. Mm-hmm. Altogether, it would be less than $5 billion. It's about $3.8 billion for the four-year educational systems. And if you kick out the financial aid, which is $1.3 to $1.4 billion, you have $2.5 billion. I suggest doing it over a 10-year period, declining the tuition by 10% a year, so it's a smooth transition. And what you do is you find that $400-500 million a year on a $155 billion budget, it's peanuts, and you bring it up. We have to remember 1981, the UC system alone, with 9 campuses then, it has 10 now, the UC system was getting 5.05% of the state budget. It's getting now 2.81.
Yeah, it's been cut in half.
Just restoring that 2%, it's $3 billion a year. You made tuition free. And again, just undergraduates and just California residents. You've been here 4 years or more. Your parents paid to build those freeways, to build those buildings. God bless you. You should have no tuition. You go past 5 years, you're going to pay $30,000 like out-of-state students. We need to streamline the process. I like that term, streamline. Simplify things and organize them so people know what's coming up, what it'll cost, and they plan accordingly.
Well, you've certainly crunched the numbers, Frank, and done a lot of research on the subject. I would like to know if you have ideas also on improving the local economy, and specifically, do you have any ideas for bringing good-paying jobs to this district, including East County?
Yes. I read a comment by John Minto, who I actually kind of like, you know, in the Santee...
Santee councilman.
Councilman. And he said he'd like to make Santee even better and keep it close to good-paying jobs. And I said, no, we need to bring the good-paying jobs here. It was on the Santee Chamber of Commerce flyer where they have all the statements, which was kudos to them for putting them together. Anyway, Santee has plenty of undeveloped land. Ramona has plenty of undeveloped land. Look at Poway. Poway brought in industry. General Atomics has probably 15, 16 buildings there. These are well-paid jobs.
A lot of biotech up there, too.
Correct. But GA has become the biggest employer over there. And I know because my wife works for GA, and I was surprised at the expansion of the place over the last 10 years. And they keep buying property. And what happens is these people that work there, they spend money in the economy, even if they live somewhere else. Just the lunchtime business is a lot. So this is what we need to negotiate with the Qualcomms that are looking in Chula Vista. We need to negotiate with a 3D printer that's in North County that's looking for a place to expand. Santee has room. Santee has land. El Cajon only has 5 acres of developable land, but they have places around Gillespie Field that they can use. They're used for junk business. They can use them for biotech, technology. We have to give them some incentives. We can work into the incentives that if they come to our area, maybe they hire a portion of their personnel from this area. This will alleviate traffic on the freeways. This will bring up the values of homes in East County. This will cut transportation time, cut pollution. I mean, there's 100 benefits. All we have to do is give them some kind of incentive. New York has done it, 10 years no property taxes. Well, we're not New York, but you know what? State of California needs to step up and do something like this.
Very good. I'd like to talk for a moment about civil liberties. Joel Anderson, as you've mentioned, is a sort of a libertarian-leaning Republican. Typically, that wing of the party is fairly staunchly for protecting our civil liberties from things like government spying on our emails and drones keeping an eye on us.
There was a bill that actually, I was disappointed, Jerry Brown vetoed. This was a Republican bill, Gorel. He's an assemblyman, AB 1327.
Mm-hmm.
It passed with bipartisan support. Brian Jones supported it. East County legislators that are voting up there supported it, except for Joel Anderson. This bill was to regulate drone flying, not just by police, but also by private companies. And I understand Barona uses their own drones, and they're a big donor into Joel's campaign. Regulate what they can research, how long they can keep the records after 1 year if they're not used for any criminal prosecution from the sheriff's department. They have to be discarded because mm-hmm. otherwise they stay forever and they fall into the wrong hands. And he voted against it while he's been saying earlier this year with Ted Lieu they want to regulate federal drones on that bill. I think it's SB 898. So I don't understand, and now I understood why he voted against it, because the California Sheriff's Association that endorsed him is against it.
Very interesting. East County is home to over 40,000 Iraqi immigrants, and certainly Iraq has been much in the news with the hostilities over there, the slaughter that the terrorists from ISIL mm-hmm. are imposing upon the people of Iraq and Syria. There's been a lot of talk both in Congress and even the state legislature about how that issue should be addressed. Congress obviously has the say-so and the president on how this will be handled in Iraq, but there's also been a lot of talk about whether perhaps the cap should be lifted on refugees, whether more humanitarian aid should be sent over there, whether a safe haven should be created in Iraq. And Senator Anderson did author a resolution in Sacramento calling on Congress to take action to help some of the Iraqi refugees. To the degree that you would have some input on that as a state legislator, what are your views about what should be done?
Well, I was surprised that state resolution, SJR, State Joint Resolution 17, was passed. I find it racist, straight up. Anybody take the time to read it, they will see. He says in one paragraph that Senator Joel Anderson, who wrote the resolution, says there's about 33 million people in Iraq of different ethnic groups. 1% of them, according to his, are persecuted. We all know it's more than that. There's Shiite Muslims that are getting killed by these Sunni fanatics. The Yazidis, the Christians, the Jews, the Mahais. There's six or seven different tribes. I'm just mentioning the big ones. So this resolution goes on in a paragraph and only requests the expansion of the admittance or the elimination of the quotas for the Christians. What are the other ones? Are they orphans? Are the Jews orphans? Are the Yazidis orphans? What are they? They don't have a soul? Are they not persecuted? So I was bothered by that. Second, I was bothered because I thought that's not a bright idea. We cannot just walk away from problems. You need to resolve them, and we need to help them resolve it. Everybody who's followed the news, they know that ISIL or ISIS, they started around 8,000 or 9,000 terrorists. Now there may be 20,000 terrorists. We need to help the Kurds to protect their territory. We have to give them the right arms. We have to give them the help to protect their territory. And we also need to do the continuous bombings. I don't think we need to put troops there, and I don't think we need to do a massive airlift. If these 600,000 people came in this country and they were mostly Chaldean Christians, a large portion would end up in San Diego County, East County, mm-hmm. between 40 and 60,000. This would double the population. The issue is not that it'll double the population, is that these people, they don't speak the language. In the vast majority, they don't have the skills that are marketable here. They will be refugees. And in a city, especially El Cajon, where 30% of the people live below the poverty level and the economy is struggling, El Cajon has 47,000 household income, Santee's at 67,000. Yes. It's not going to help anything, including themselves. You don't just walk away. Northern Ireland, Ireland and England, they have the same issue for 80 years, right? Mm-hmm. Ireland didn't just say, okay, we'll take our Northern Irish people, the Catholics, we'll take them back, and everything is resolved. This is not how you solve problems. And I don't know if you can ever exterminate the ISIS people, those fanatics. They will always be there. Anybody who doesn't understand faith-based fanaticism, they need to read history.
Yeah.
So I don't think the resolution was right. I don't think bringing 600,000 people here is right. I mean, they would go in Detroit. That's a bankrupt city. They would come to San Diego. They would go to Phoenix. They would go to Memphis. They would go to San Jose, where the big communities are. And humanitarianly, we'll be fine.
So however, you're okay with sending humanitarian aid over there?
Humanitarian. We need to arm the people over there. The U.S. is not arming the Kurds because Turkey doesn't want the Kurds to be armed because they think they're going to have an insurrection against them like they've been fighting them for years, and Turkey's our friend. Well, guess what? You need to face reality and know that eventually Kurdistan needs to have its own country, so you got to arm them and you got to work with them to solve problems. We're paying the mistakes of the British Empire, 1921, Winston Churchill, with a Balfour deal down in Egypt where they divided the area and everybody got the short end of the stick. Israel got it, Palestinians got it, Iraqis got it, but now we're being called to solve these problems. Lifting a million people from there, bringing them here, is not solving anything.
What else would you like our listeners to know, Frank, about your campaign or the issues in Sacramento that we may not have already touched on today?
Okay, the number one thing is campaign finance reform. I've had about $12,000, two-thirds of that in my fundraising. Two-thirds of that has come from myself, and the rest has come from residents, many from El Cajon, many not Democrats. Joel has collected over the years over $1 million. And 95% of it has come from PACs, from insurance companies, from casinos. He takes the limit from tobacco companies. Again, this year, he took the limit from tobacco companies. So there is no regulation. I smoked for 40 years. I don't like cigarettes. I think they would have been limited. I worked with the city of El Cajon. When they asked me, I gave them some information along with other citizens, and they passed what's the golden rule for e-cigarette regulation, and they should be proud of it, and it had nothing to do with political affiliation. Falconer said something last year, for a lot of the problems, there's one way to solve it. There's no Democratic or Republican way. You do it or you don't do it. And, you know, East County has been totally deprived because we have legislators like Brian Jones that votes no a lot. Anderson votes no 98% of the time. And any time you vote no and you don't work with anyone, when you go ask for something, they'll say nope. This is human reaction. You have to work as a team player. I think this is the first time in 20 years that I remember that East County has the opportunity to have three challengers, two Democrats, one Republican, that are immensely more successful and qualified in their personal lives than the three sitting incumbents and have the ability to do much more work and better quality work than what East County has gotten and deserves.
Okay. We have been speaking with Frank Simbukakis, listeners, if you tuned in late today, who is a candidate for the state Senate running against incumbent Senator Joel Anderson. Frank, I want to thank you very much for joining us. And also, can you let our listeners know if they want to get in touch with you or find out more about you, where can they get that information?
The best way is my site. My campaign site is Fotios, F as in Frank, O-T-I-O-S, for Senate38.com. I'm also on Facebook, and I think those are the two best places.
Okay, very good. And again, we have invited Senator Joel Anderson to join us on the show as well. We certainly hope that he will accept the invitation, and if he does, we'll look forward to speaking with him as well. Meanwhile, Frank, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Don't forget to vote, please. Exercise your power. Vote. Thank you.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Brian Boyko, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.